Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Burrowing very deep just to stay warm, just to get next to the tubes. You got tubes in your radio? I didn't think so. Ladies and gentlemen, from deformed infants to grandparents with cancer. Imagine the videos you could see of that scene right now. But these are families near Da Nang Air Base in Vietnam. Hey, how about that? Da Nang. They've long blamed the toxic legacy of war for their ills, according to Agence France-Presse. Now, after a decades-long wait, a historic Agent Orange cleanup is finally beginning. The base was a key site in the U.S. defoliant program during the Vietnam War. We had a war there? Missed that. And much of the 21 million gallons of Agent Orange used during Operation Ranch Hand. How about that? 21 million gallons is all. That was mixed, stored, and loaded onto planes at Da Nang. How about that, Elky Summer, huh? At Da Nang. On Thursday, the U.S. and Vietnam began a long-awaited joint cleanup effort at the site using technology which will heat the contaminated soil. See, this is the opposite of what we're doing at Phuc, where we're freezing the soil. Here, we're heating the soil high enough to break dioxin down into harmless compounds. At least we hope so. Like one oxen. The defoliants were sprayed over vast swaths of jungle in South Vietnam in an attempt to flush out Viet Cong guerrillas by depriving them of tree cover and food. That's all. Some nights we would have to cover our mouths because of a strange smell, said one Da Nang resident. He wasn't talking about Bob Hope. Three of his five children are severely mentally and physically disabled. For years, she, Nguyen T. Binh, thought this was due to sins committed in a past life. Aww. But now believes it could be due to her and her late husband's exposure to dioxin. Thank God we don't use chemical weapons, ladies and gentlemen, because that would be... I heard it might be Agent Orange, she told AFP, Agence France-Presse, as her adult daughters crawled around her like infants. Washington still disputes the uncertain link between dioxin exposure and ill health. Nonetheless, speaking at the launch ceremony for the decontamination ceremony, U.S. Ambassador David Scheer, no relation, described it as a historic milestone. We're cleaning up this mess, he said, adding that the U.S. would in the future undertake an environmental assessment of another hotspot, Bien Hoa Air Base. Isn't that wild, Bien Hoa? The $43 million project comes as the former foes draw closer, oddly enough. In a while, the Da Nang Air Base is one of the three dioxin hotspots where concentrations of extremely toxic contaminants from Agent Orange are nearly 400 times the globally accepted maximum standard. Because we don't engage in chemical warfare, you see, ladies and gentlemen. There's the international norms about that. Rates of cancer, birth deformities, and other dioxin-related diseases are higher than the national average in these areas, and the health threat lingers. In hotspots like Da Nang, we're still finding very young people who are affected by Agent Orange-related diseases, says the chairman of the Vietnam Association for Victims of Agent Orange, VAVA. The government doesn't have the capacity to move them out of contaminated areas, according to that official who is a retired general. Hanoi says up to 3 million Vietnamese people were exposed to Agent Orange, that 1 million suffer grave health repercussions today. At least 150,000 children born with birth defects. An attempt by Vietnamese victims to obtain compensation from the United States had little success. The U.S. Supreme Court in 2009 declined to take up the case because we don't use chemical. But American veterans have received billions of dollars for diseases linked to Agent Orange. Neither the U.S. government nor the chemical manufacturers ever admitted liability. But still, the vets get paid compensation, as well they should. Support the troops. And on the subject of chemical weapons, three decades after the United States started destroying its own, chemical weapons, the nation's stockpile, the U.S.'s stockpile of chemical weapons, ladies and gentlemen, stands at more than 3,000 tons. That's only three times more than what Syria has. Weighs as much as three dozen Boeing 737s loaded for takeoff. The U.S. has made significant progress, eradicating 90% of the 31,000 tons it once possessed. The military doesn't expect to complete destruction until 2023, don't you know, according to the Associated Press. Deadlines have come and gone and had been extended. Gee, thank goodness the United States isn't watching. Oh, I see. And like other countries, the United States has found that complying with the Chemical Weapons Convention is not easy to do. In the United States, those holdups have ranged from environmental delays and political opposition to technical and safety challenges to tough laws restricting the transport of the weapons. Likewise, it's been difficult to round up the tens of billions of dollars to pay for destroying the cache of chemical weapons that the United States still possesses. Thank goodness Syria won't have any of those problems. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
I guess I'm just lucky so-and-so.
Yeah, we've taken a couple weeks off, but the people who start their answers to questions on interview programs with the word so for no apparent reason has continued unabated. This example from the NPR show Here and Now, and you'll hear it here and now.
Is there Twitter dialect or accent?
So there's not just one Twitter accent, but many.
Give us some examples.
So you can think about a few different types.
How do you see all these tweets?
So what we're trying to do with that study is, and this is some work in progress, we want to see how words spread between places.
You might see that Memphis and Atlanta have higher African-American populations than Nashville, and that might tell you something about the tweets going back and forth.
Yeah, so we're trying to really aggregate information across many different words.
So whatever the language uses in Cleveland are, they're going to have a better chance of making their way to Boston than they ever did.
Perhaps. So I think the premise of social media is that it could connect anybody anywhere.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right.
So he said, yes, yeah, so, and perhaps so. Expanding the uses of so and putting the so back in social media, won't you? Hi, hello, welcome to the show.
If you are mean for a time, but that's just bitter of you, cause you are sad inside. If you are mean for a time, maybe you think about it more and
Thank you.
Harry, I don't have to listen to your phone calls to know what you're doing.
Thanks, Joe Biden. And from London, England, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, we are not number one. What's the most competitive economy in the world? No, not the United States. Sorry about that. Switzerland. Sure. With the cuckoo clocks and everything. And the cheese. U.S. and Germany gained ground lost in the years of the big fiscal. Although, of course, that's only true if you had money to start with. But the World Economic Forum says Switzerland holds the top spot now for a fifth year in a row. Germany and the U.S. rose two slots to fourth and fifth. We're number five, ladies and gentlemen. Singapore and Finland retained their second and third positions. We're behind Finland. Finland. They can't even make mobile phones. Singapore, you can't chew gum on the street. See what I'm saying? That makes you more competitive. The U.S. clambered back amid an improvement in the status of its financial market. Oh, well, that can't be bad. Even as questions lingered about the stability of its economy, said the World Economic Forum. Yeah, questions lingered. Having declined for four consecutive years in the ranking, the United States reverses its downward trend. Switzerland is home to companies including Nestle and Novartis. Drugs. It was credited for encouraging innovation and an efficient labor market. Public institutions in Switzerland were described as among the most effective and transparent. Oh, please. We have the most transparent administration in history. Just ask the secret court. While its economy was seen as among the most stable. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. We are not number one. Speaking of the financial crisis, the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Yes, there's more than one Federal Reserve Bank. You knew that, right? There are 12? You knew that, right? Study just released by the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas estimates the cost of the mess at between $6 trillion and $14 trillion. It's a big range, babe. In the United States alone. So, whatever. And no, of course, nobody went to jail. And by the way, the big banks got bigger. And according to today's New York Times, are now speculating in the credits that oil companies get for adding ethanol to the gasoline, which at least some experts are saying will raise the price of gasoline later this year. So watch for that. But anyway, between 6 and 14 trillion we've lost in the last 5 years, thanks to the big financial thing. That could buy a lot of cluster bombs. Oh, by the way, yes, while we're talking about horrible weapons that the world has decided should never be used. Among the two countries not signatory to the World Treaty Against Cluster Bombs, Russia and the United States. You're welcome. And now, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet.
Addie, it's cold and rainy today, as you noticed.
Wearing my rubbers.
I won't even ask. The...
No, ask.
All right. Where?
On my neutron.
Good place for your rubber. The Japanese government and TEPCO were scrambling to reassure people on Friday that they have a lid on Fukushima after a senior utility executive said the nuclear plant was, quote, not under control, unquote.
Well, neither am I.
It's true. The remarks by Kazuhiko Yamashita, oh please, who holds the executive level title of fellow at the Tokyo Electric Power Company, seems to flatly contradict assurances Prime Minister Abe gave Olympic officials a week ago, according to Agence France-Presse. But of course, that was before Japan got the Olympics. He had to say that then. In a meeting with members of the opposition party, Yamashita was asked whether he agreed that the situation is under control, as Abe had declared at the Olympic Committee meeting. He responded by saying, quote, I think the current situation is that it is not under control.
So they'll hold the non-Olympics.
Good point. News of his comment prompted a rush by the government and TEPCO to elaborate on his remarks, saying he was talking specifically about the planet's wastewater problem.
Just that.
Not the facility's situation in general. Chief Cabinet Secretary Yoshihide Suga, Abe's right-hand man, separately said Yamashita was repeatedly pressed by lawmakers when he made the remark. The view of TEPCO as a company does not contradict Abe's statement. TEPCO has poured thousands of tons of water on the reactors to tame meltdowns sparked by the earthquake and tsunami. The utility says they're now stable, but need to be kept cool to prevent them from running out of control again.
We all need to be kept cool.
Yeah, true. True that. Much of that now contaminated water is being stored in temporary tanks at the plant, and TEPCO has so far revealed no clear plan for it. The problem, of course, has been worsened by leaks in some of those tanks that are believed to seep into groundwater, which runs out to the sea. Maybe it's out of control. Maybe it's not. But Japan pledged a renewed push to contain potentially hazardous leaks after the operator, TEPCO, reported spiking levels of radiation in the groundwater. Late on Monday, 2 days after Tokyo won the bid to host the Olympics, TEPCO announced samples taken from a well at the site showed the presence of radioactive substances, including strontium 90, a known carcinogen. Reports said the utility believed it seems now more likely that leaks from tanks storing the highly polluted water had made their way into the groundwater, which flows to the sea. TEPCO said groundwater showed radiation readings of 3,200 becquerels per liter.
I love me my becquerels.
The contamination level compares with government limits of 100 becquerels per kilogram in food and 10 becquerels per liter in drinking water.
So don't drink it. Eat it.
What?
The groundwater.
Okay. If consumed, strontium accumulates in bones and can cause cancer.
No, don't accumulate it. Pee it right out.
Survivors and residents of Fukushima who were and still are largely affected by the ongoing nuclear disaster expressed their disappointment and anger made by the Tokyo District Public Prosecutor's Office this week that it will not be pushing to indict any high-ranking government or TEPCO officials connected with the meltdown.
Of course not. That's called accountability.
That is what it's called. Prosecutors stated in their announcement that the officials cannot be held to criminal responsibility for the disaster, this to the bitter disappointment, according to the Japan Daily Press, of those who filed the cases against them. Join the club, babe.
Who are you calling babe?
It's a rhetorical babe. And Dateline Kansas, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, has taken the only nuclear power plant in Kansas off its special watch list for plants with problems needing closer security.
So the watch list is not in Kansas anymore.
Yeah, that's right. But some new issues have arisen at the plant. Wolf Creek. NRC has listed it in its degraded performance category.
Well, you're in that category.
I know. People saw my performance this week. For more than a year, that's the next to the lowest of four ratings. Those problems have been resolved, and the plant has been upgraded to normal status.
So one above degraded is normal.
That's right. It's so close. Just over the line. Now, though, the NRC wants Wolf Creek management to resolve another problem. Some employees, especially those charged with making sure the plant operates safely, are afraid to report safety concerns because of potential retaliation, you see. In a letter to Wolf Creek, the NRC says it has received 19 allegations, five of them claiming employees had been terminated for reporting safety concerns in the last 3 years. Safety culture is a key core value for the NRC, said the NRC spokeswoman Laura Uselding. It's imperative to the safety of operations at nuclear power plants that any worker who raises a safety concern should feel free to do so without fear of retaliation, she said. The NRC wants Wolf Creek management to respond within days with specific plans to make employees feel free to report safety concerns. They also want a report in 6 months on how effective those efforts have been. Of course, that report will be by the company.
What are you saying?
I'm saying safety culture sounds like listening to Carmen as you watch Leaks.
Cute.
Thank you. Clean, cheap, safe, too. Clean, cheap, and safe to meet her. Our friend, the Atom. Ladies and gentlemen, more news of secrecy. Strangely enough, coming out these days since Ed Snowden's revelations of material from the NSA, previously kept secret. Hard to maintain that that stuff isn't newsworthy. So, for example, videos and photographs of the only Guantanamo detainee whom officials admit was tortured. I thought that was against international law. Silly me. Those videos and photographs need not come to light, a federal judge ruled this week. The U.S. government accused Mohammed al-Qahtani of plotting to be the 20th hijacker on 9/11. Court papers say that an immigration agent at an airport in Orlando turned al-Qahtani back to Saudi Arabia after finding him with no return ticket, no credit cards, and less than $3,000 in cash. Pakistani forces captured him on the Afghan border in late 2001 and sent him to Guantanamo 2 months later. There, officials admit al-Qahtani faced so-called aggressive interrogation practices. 20-hour questioning, stress positions, forced nudity, waterboarding, and threats with a dog who snarled. Not a happy dog. Al-Qahtani later recanted the accusations he'd made against other detainees. His lawyers describe him as a broken man who's been found talking to non-existent people, much as I'm doing right now, and crouching in a corner of his cell covered in a sheet for hours on end. The Pentagon dropped all charges against him without prejudice in 2008. The convening authority for military commissions, Susan Crawford, indicated this was because his treatment met the legal definition of torture, even though it's against international law. But, you know, we're looking forward. So a Freedom of Information Act was filed, a request was filed in 2010, seeking footage and photographs of his interrogations. The CIA refused to confirm or deny the existence of the images. The FBI and Department of Defense clammed up after identifying 6 photographs and 53 videotapes of him inside his cell. Two depict intelligence debriefings. A law professor working with a rights group that sued to make the material public told reporters the footage she viewed was sickening, though a gag order kept her from elaborating. The FBI denied in court the footage being requested depicted any mistreatment. After hearing oral arguments, District Judge Naomi Buchwald ruled late Thursday the materials were properly classified. Disclosure, said an official of the Army, would endanger the lives and physical safety of U.S. troops, diplomats, and aid workers by helping garner support for attacks against them, unquote. Couldn't you conceal the identities of the people who were engaging in aggressive interrogation? I don't know. The Army spokesperson said footage and images could be easily manipulated to falsely indicate mistreatment where he claims none occurred. The judge did not review the tapes before she made her decision. She just reviewed the FBI's description of the tapes, which she said confirm the government's representation that these do not document any abuse or mistreatment. There's your accountability. There's your transparency right there. Although a judge on the Secret Surveillance Court was so disturbed by the NSA's repeated violations of privacy restrictions, he questioned the viability of its bulk collection of Americans' phone records, according to newly declassified documents. Judge Reggie Walton, now the presiding judge on the FISA court, imposed a significant and previously undisclosed restriction on the NSA's ability to access its bulk databases of phone records after finding the agency repeatedly violated privacy protections. Thousands of American phone numbers were improperly accessed by government analysts. The documents indicate U.S. government officials, including the director of the NSA, Keith Alexander, gave misleading statements to the FISA court about how they carried out that surveillance. Despite repeated public assurances of NSA competence, the agency told the FISA court in 2009, quote, "From a technical standpoint, there was no single person who had a complete understanding of the phone records architecture," unquote. All that led to, quote, "daily violations," unquote, for more than 2 years of call records from Americans who were not the subject of any investigation, according to Judge Walton. So, in this case, ignorance of the law or of the technology or the architecture is an excuse. Did the judge the violation serious enough to order the authorities not to access the data collected until such time as the government is able to restore the court's confidence that the government can and will comply with previously approved procedures for accessing the data. And the NSA discovered one of its partner agencies improperly included credit card numbers in its databases. You're welcome. But you didn't hear this, ladies and gentlemen, because it's secret. And now...
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A criminal probe is underway into the Veteran Affairs Department's handling of an outbreak of Legionnaire's disease at the VA's Pittsburgh healthcare system. The VA Inspector General has launched a criminal investigation separate from an administrative review completed in April that found the Pittsburgh facility did not adequately maintain its water systems to prevent Legionella propagation, nor did it flush hot water faucets routinely as recommended when the bacteria is detected. At least 32 veterans contracted Legionnaire's disease over the last year and a half. No, 2 years and a half. Five died, according to a congressional field hearing in Pittsburgh. The House panel convened to determine whether VA management has taken steps to reduce preventable patient deaths. Panel members have charged that VA officials reward senior executives and physicians responsible at troubled medical centers with large performance pay incentives and bonuses instead of holding them accountable. Here's your accountability right there. Dateline Kabul, a number of reports issued by the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction have soared over the past year. So have disagreements with U.S. foreign aid officials who have rejected the majority of the watchdog's recommendations and accused investigators of ignoring facts to shape conclusions. The U.S. aid officials have accused the Special Inspector General of intentionally ignoring information that might have changed the report's findings and refused to concur with two out of the three of the report's recommendations. This was a report, a specific report of the Inspector General regarding funding for rural health care. But officials of SIGAR, the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, told Stars and Stripes the idea that the rate of non-concurrence reflects on the validity of SIGAR's work is a false conclusion to draw. These agencies are just not taking these recommendations seriously. Much like NPR when they rejected their ombudsman's report, don't you think? Speaking of NPR, they announced this week they are, unlike, newspapers, legacy, old media, which are conducting buyouts of their employees, NPR, new media, digitally hip, is conducting buyouts of his employees. Back to Inspectors General, the former head of the Social Security Administration is scoffing at the idea that the new Exchange Data Hub will be ready on time. That's for the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare, that's supposed to go into effect a couple weeks from now. The former Social Security Commissioner, Michael Astru, said the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services held up work on the hub while trying to get other agencies to chip in on the bill. So watch those exchanges. They'll be fun. News of Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. So back to chemical weapons. You know, we all know by now, that the United States and Russia, Secretary of State John Kerry and Soviet Foreign Minister Lavrov, agreed yesterday on a plan that would have Syria report, declare all of its chemical weapons, and agree to a program for their rapid destruction, much more rapid than the United States has done. Interestingly, before Kerry left for that meeting with the Soviet foreign minister, he had a visitor to his office to give him some tips on dealing with Russian officials. Former Secretary of State, former National Security Advisor Henry Kissinger. If you're like me and you wonder what that meeting must have been like, we may find out the answer moments from now here on the show. But first,
it's very clear our love is here to stay. Not for a year, whatever and a day. The radio and the telephone and the movies that we know may just be passing fancies and in time may go. But oh my dear, our love is here to stay. Together we're going a long, long way. In time, the Rockies may crumble, Gibraltar may tumble, they're only made of clay. But our love is here to stay. The radio and the telephone and the movies that we know may just be passing fancies and in time may go. But, oh my dear, love is here to stay. Together we're going a long, long way. In time, the Rockies may crumble and Gibraltar, it may tumble. They're only made of clay. But our love is here to stay.
Mr. Secretary, thank you for coming in this morning. I can't tell you what this means to me.
You're right. I've heard your recent speeches.
Well, you certainly know this office as well as any person alive.
Yes, it was the office of my rival when I was National Security Advisor, and he was Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm. That would be Bill Rogers.
You are free to speak his name. And then it was my office when I climbed over the lifeless corpse of his career.
Mm-hmm. Can I offer you a beverage of your choice?
It's before noon, isn't it?
Yes, sir. My plane takes off.
Well, then it won't be the beverage of my choice. I'll have some water.
Yeah. Well, we've got some fine State Department spring water right here for you.
Thank you.
There you go. I have to say on a personal note, when I was a soldier just back from Vietnam and I threw my ribbons or my medals over the Capitol fence, I never dreamed that I'd be sitting here pouring you water today.
Well, of course, back in those days, my boss wanted you arrested and charged with something akin to treason, so I never dreamed you'd be sitting in my old chair.
We actually replaced the chair.
Well, it's been a while. I did have Christian on my staff prepare these for you.
These would be
your medals. Now that you're defending unilateral American military action contrary to what's laughingly referred to as international law, you deserve them.
Well, thank you, Mr. Secretary. I'm so very close to being moved. Now, obviously, sir, I reached out to you because I have some meetings coming up with Foreign Minister Lavrov.
Well, you don't have to reach out. I'm sitting right here.
No, of course. And I thought you might have some thoughts on dealing with Russian or, in your case, Soviet foreign ministers or either or both.
Well, of course, the Russians and before them the Soviets and before them the Russians take a very geopolitically focused view of the world. They see Syria, very close to some of their former republics, as part of their axis of influence. So they will be far more responsive if that point of view is acknowledged.
Yes, sir. If I may, that seems almost obvious.
If I may, listening to your recent speeches, I thought that those of the obvious might be in order. So, to take a concrete example, when we engineered the coup that ousted Allende in Chile, the Soviets and their friends made a lot of noise about him being democratically elected and so forth. But basically, that was our sphere, and they acknowledged that.
So you're saying that Lavrov and Putin are expecting us to make a lot of noise about Syria, but not do much of anything?
I think we're all expecting that, Mr. Secretary.
Allende actually was democratically elected, though, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. So was the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt.
We didn't overthrow them, though.
You didn't have to. Anyway, foreign policy is a lot like playing a game of chicken on the highway. The first player who takes his hands off the steering wheel has the advantage.
Well, but of course, now we're playing that game with a huge domestic and worldwide audience.
That was Nixon's great talent. He didn't like Jews and he was a bit of a drinker, but he didn't care what people thought. So he could feel free to take his hands off the steering wheel first. And he did, over and over again. Of course, I had to tell him when to do it, but...
Again, sir, all due respect.
At my age, I need you to get to the point more than I need the respect.
Fine. We've just been through two wars started by a foreign policy team that didn't just take their hands off the steering wheel. They nailed the accelerator to the floor and threw the brake pedal out the window. I don't think in a world dominated by social media that transcends borders, a world leader can operate that way, with all due respect, Mr. Secretary.
Mm-hmm.
I think a leader has to demonstrate some degree of concern for world opinion.
Oh, don't tell me, Mr. Secretary. Tell Bashar al-Assad. Look, when I entered the White House, the Chinese were viewed as a grave threat to the free world.
Partly thanks to your old boss.
Sure. But 10 years after the old man left office in supposed disgrace, I had consulting contracts with the Chinese worth $20 million. That's the magic of smart diplomacy.
So you're saying...
I'm saying that if you play your cards right, mm-hmm. you can end up with a multi-million-dollar consulting contract in Syria. I mean, if not you, who? Lavrov? Look, your president clearly doesn't want to be in another war.
Well, he ran to end wars, not...
I know, and my president had a secret plan to end war. More importantly, your president has a Congress that won't let him get into a war he doesn't want to be in. Mr. Putin has generously offered to humiliate him by getting him out of his own jam. I suggest you find a way to let him. Then you'll really have earned those medals.
Yeah. I appreciate the time, Dr. Kissinger. If this works out, maybe both you and my president will have earned your peace prizes.
We both should live so long.
Playing the lottery.
One more note from Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen. The Department of Agriculture doled out more than $20 million in excess financial assistance last year. No, not to food stamp recipients. The largest overpayments came in the form of farm subsidies for crop insurance. In a report released last week, the USDA Inspector General said the agency spent nearly $15 million on undue payouts through the Crop Insurance Corporation while issuing no major overpayments for food stamps. Overpayments are defined as payouts that rise at least 50% higher than the correct amount. The Inspector General's report comes as Congress is ready to look over a new farm bill. The USD reported its errors, its figures late and with errors. Without accurate or timely reporting, the effects of USDA's actions or strategies to eliminate the errors causing high dollar overpayments are not fully known, said the carefully worded analysis. 239 overpayments worth a combined $20 million during the 2012 fiscal year. That's almost twice as many overpayments, almost twice as much money as during the previous cycle. Excess payments through the Crop Insurance Corporation averaged $209,000 excess per payout. The Inspector General said the USDA could decrease its overpayments through better control over bookkeeping and stricter adherence to reporting guidelines, like do your job. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Yeah, here are the marching orders for the week. Do your job. Okay, this week, of course, a lot of apologies related to the 12th anniversary of 9/11. So here we go. Officials at Boston's Logan International Airport apologize for holding a fire drill complete with smoke and flames on the 12th anniversary of 9/11. The Massachusetts Port Authority conducted the drill, which involved what appeared to be a plane on fire. Heavy black smoke could be seen drifting over the airfield. That was tweeted by the airport and sparked several other tweets asking why authorities would choose September 11th to conduct a drill involving a plane on fire. This is ridiculous. Have some respect. People died 12 years ago on flights originating out of your airport. How dare you, one person wrote. Another asked why authorities would schedule the drill on a day when travelers are already on edge. Massport, which runs the airport, apologized for the drill. On the Logan Airport Facebook page and Twitter feed, Massport apologizes for conducting the fire training exercise and understands that it may have offended many of those touched by the events of September 11th. Governor Deval Patrick told the State House News Service that holding the drill on the anniversary of September 11th was, quote, just dumb. Dateline Madison, Wisconsin. A Wisconsin golf course owner who advertised 9 holes of golf for $9.11 to mark the anniversary apologized but said he would keep the club open despite a backlash that included death threats. Tumbledown Trails Golf Course near Madison advertised a special, saying it was intended to commemorate the 12th anniversary. The discount, which included 18 holes of golf for $19.11, was good for the anniversary on Wednesday only. News of the offer spread on social media. The Facebook page of the golf course was overrun with negative comments, including threats to burn down the family-operated public golf course. We're a little hurt by the fact that people are putting such a negative context on this, said manager Mark Watts. He owns the course as well. I thought people would appreciate it. Watts apologized on Facebook and was personally fielding calls on Tuesday, said there was no intention to cause offense. He decided not to close the golf course, which he was originally thinking of doing on Wednesday. We could close, but then all these people with their negative attitudes, they win. He said he spent much of the night throwing up over the backlash. And after getting bombarded with hate tweets for about an hour, AT&T removed an image from Twitter that had been meant as a 9/11 tribute, a photo showing a hand holding a phone up in the tribute in front of the tribute to in light searchlights. Quote, we apologize to anyone who felt our post was in poor taste. The image was solely meant to pay respect to those affected by the 9/11 tragedy, the company wrote in a follow-up tweet. And the Los Angeles Lakers deleted a 9/11 tweet after receiving unexpected criticism and later apologized for the perceived misstep in a statement to USA Today. The photo in the tweet featured Lakers star Kobe Bryant during the 2001-2002 season with a commemorative ribbon in clear view in his jersey that included an American flag. The hashtag that was widely used to honor the 9/11 victims, Never Forget, was displayed across the picture, but many fans initially saw it as an attempt at humor focusing on the afro that Bryant wore at the time. So the later Lakers apologized. Quote, we apologize to anyone who took this differently than we intended and were therefore offended by it, Lakers spokesman John Black said it by email. Ultimately, our intent was to honor the spirit of remembering a day that we should all never forget. A former CIA base chief has asked Italy's president for a pardon of his conviction in absentia for kidnapping a terrorist suspect as part of the CIA's extraordinary rendition program. Robert Selden Lady apologized for the strain the case has put on U.S.-Italy relations, and he cited Italy's pardon of another American convicted in the case. I never intended to disrespect Italy's sovereignty. Quite to the contrary, said Robert Selden Lady, former U.S. consular officer based in Milan. The president's office acknowledged receipt of the letter, said the request had been forwarded to the Office for Justice Affairs. Lady was sentenced to 9 years for the 2003 kidnapping of an Egyptian cleric suspected of recruiting terrorists in Milan. Lady was briefly held this summer in Panama based on an international arrest warrant before being allowed to return to the United States. In requesting the pardon, Lady noted he is the only one of U.S. defendants subject to an international arrest warrant and cited the pardon earlier this year of a U.S. Air Force colonel also had been convicted in the case. Sorry, Lady. And Dateline Oxford, Mississippi, in the words of William Faulkner, the past is never past. It's not even, sorry, the past is never dead. It's not even past. It was with this in mind that Reverend Eric Hankins and his congregation at First Baptist Church in Oxford passed a resolution to retract and nullify a 1968 vote by the same church to ban African-Americans from its pews. Too often apologies are made to no one specifically, Hankins said, but a true apology has to acknowledge someone specific. The vote in the 60s was cast by the whole congregation, and we passed the resolution in the same way. The Netherlands formally apologized this week for mass killings committed by the Dutch military more than 6 decades ago in Indonesia during its former colonies' fight for independence. Quote, on behalf of the Dutch government, I apologize for these excesses. Today, I also apologize to the widows, said Dutch Ambassador Tjeerd de Zwaan. His government has agreed to compensate the victims' widows in Sulawesi and Rawagede, who turned to the Dutch courts seeking retribution. Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel has apologized for a secret unit operating under the direction of former Chicago Police Commander John Berge, which carried out systematic torture of suspects in criminal cases, mainly African-Americans on Chicago's South Side, to produce false confessions between 1972 and 1991. Big Brother host Julie Chen revealed this week on CBS that she underwent double eyelid surgery to make her eyes look less Asian at the behest of her former TV station, WDTN in Dayton, Ohio. She said her ex-boss told her she'd never get on the anchor desk looking that Chinese, saying her eyes were small and unexpressive. An agent later told her the same thing. The Ohio station issued an apology blaming old management. "We are sorry to hear about what happened to Julie Chen when she was a reporter here. The station was under different management and ownership at the time." And the president of a cosmetic Japanese cosmetics company, Kanebo, apologized this week as the cosmetics giant came under fire for dragging its feet in halting shipments of skin whitening products that have been blamed for leaving thousands of customers with blotchy skin, not including Michael Jackson. President Masumi Natsusaka pledged to overhaul safety controls and to temporarily cut his salary to atone for the widening scandal. "We offer a wholehearted apology to customers," he said at a press conference while bowing deeply in the Japanese style. Changing their eyes and changing their skin color. Something's going on over there. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And you probably noticed there was a election in New York City this week, a primary election to vote on the new mayor. And the most interesting thing about it from a national perspective was the 5% showing he's out of the running of former Congressman Anthony Weiner, who had left Congress because he'd been found to be sending sexy text messages, including pictures of his member of Congress. And while saying that he had put all that behind him, so to speak, it came out during the mayor's race that he had resumed the practice under the handle of Carlos Danger. That was the name under which he was sexting. So as I say, this week in the mayor's race, he finished last, did former Congressman Weiner with only 5%. In an angry press conference afterwards, he said he's hoping to now spend more time with Carlos Danger.
He wrote out of the East one day. Lots to show, but not much to say. Every night he'd come out to play. He seemed like a friendly stranger. Said he was a member's only guy. Self-esteem was skyscraper high. But soon he was hung out to dry. Bigger flop than the Lone Ranger. His picture needs no frame, Carlos Danger. Yes, his shots were always true as they flashed into the blue. But he wasn't meant for you, Carlos Danger. Carlos Danger. But enough was never enough. For adventuring in the buff, he lived to show off his stuff, naked as a child in a manger. He did it only for sport, for the thrill of a killer retort. All he feared was the report that would be a game changer. Shots were always true as they flashed up into the blue. But he wasn't meant for you, Carlos Danger. night of his life couldn't be cleaner. He yearned to be a burger, but he was only a wiener. A wiener. His conquests he couldn't count. No peak that he wouldn't mount. Of jokes he's a perfect fount. Carlos Danger. Carlos Danger.
Finally, a group of researchers in Raleigh, North Carolina, has developed an inexpensive instant test for formaldehyde on food. Using it, they found about a fourth of the fish they bought at chain grocery stores contained unacceptable levels of formaldehyde, as if you were in a FEMA trailer or something. Formaldehyde was only found on some of the fish imported from China and from South Vietnam. So, kind of their thanks for the dioxin. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR. I can't even say it anymore because of the cutbacks and the buyouts. NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations whenever you want it, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcsn.org. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com, available as a free podcast from Sideshow Network, iTunes, and soundcloud.com. And it'd be just like getting rid of all those chemical weapons if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Already, thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, in exile. And Hawaii Desk, thanks as always to Pam Halstead. Thanks to Adrian Bottom at Global Radio here in London for help with today's broadcast. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of the Change is Hard Radio Network. So long from London.